You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Next up is Eurovision, where Francis speaks to European correspondent Cameron Mulgan. This week, they cover Boris Johnson's survival through a vote of no confidence, the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, the UK looking to send asylum seekers to Rwanda, the first round of French parliamentary elections, and much more. Here they are now.
Unexpectedly heartfelt ukulele performance there from Iceland.
It's Eurovision on 95BFM with our European correspondent, Cameron Mulgan.
Kia ora, Cameron. Great to be back on the segment. Let's start off this week by keeping up to date on the situation in Ukraine, as per usual. What's most pressing at the moment?
Yeah, hi. All the focus has been on Severodonetsk these past couple of weeks, with one of the last major cities in Luhansk province not under Russian control. Ukraine has staked it as one of the significant battlegrounds for the war, which has resulted in fierce fighting with Russian forces. It's reported that the last bridge out of the city to the Ukrainian-held side has been destroyed, with Russia making slow gains in the city. Up to 500 civilians, along with soldiers, are reported to be held up at the Azot chemical plant in the city. This is reminiscent of the Azovstal steel plant siege in Mariupol. A Ukrainian presidential aide, Mykhailo Podolyak, has stated that between 1 to 200 Ukrainian soldiers are dying every day in fighting throughout the country, stressing the importance for more heavy equipment to try and match Russia's artillery capabilities. On Twitter, he actually released a list of what he wants, 1,000 howitzers, 300 multiple rocket launchers, 500 tanks, 2,000 armored vehicles to try and get parity with Russian forces. Last week, Brits Aidan Aslan and Sean Pinner and Moroccan Saudin Brahim were sentenced to death by the unrecognized separatists in Donetsk for their part in fighting with Ukrainian Marines in Mariupol against Russian and separatist forces. This follows their surrender in April. And in Mariupol, following the destruction during the fighting with Russian forces and now Russian occupation, it's said to be at risk of a major cholera outbreak. German tabloid Bild am Sonntag reported that German Chancellor Olaf Scholz will finally be travelling to Kiev this month after putting it off for quite some time. This would be alongside French President Emmanuel Macron and Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi ahead of the G7 meeting later this month. And on Saturday, EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen made her second visit to Kiev to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. This is ahead of a possible assessment of Ukraine's candidate status within the EU later this week.
Halfway through the year and the war certainly rages on. Hey, last week we missed this segment, so why don't we take pause here and touch base on some happenings in Europe that we've spoken about in the past. Last time we caught up, the Sue Gray report on Partygate had just come out and Boris Johnson has made some headlines since then. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, there were murmurs of a no confidence vote. This due to Boris Johnson's party's over lockdown. It ended up happening quite quickly early last week after 15% of members of the Conservative Party submitted their motions of confidence. No confidence vote was held last Monday night, with Boris Johnson surviving with 211 votes of confidence to 148 against him. After winning, Boris Johnson declared it was a very good result and one that was, quote, convincing and decisive. This victory is actually a smaller margin than Theresa May's 2018 no confidence vote. And although she survived, she actually resigned 6 months later due to disagreements over Brexit. I mean, it's a bit hard to say it's convincing when 40% of your own party voted no confidence in you. With Tory party rules, there can't be another vote for a year. However, some within the party are saying they could change the rules to force another vote before this. Does it mean Boris Johnson will survive by the next election? I mean, who knows? With changes to the Northern Ireland Protocol coming up, it could be anyone's guess.
Yeah, and we spoke a few weeks ago about the political sphere in Northern Ireland. And just recently, there's been legislation released adjusting that Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, I think detailing how they intend to break their Brexit agreement with the UK. Could you explain that to me in a bit more detail and how you think it might play out?
Yeah, Foreign Secretary Liz Truss on Monday tabled the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, which takes unilateral action against parts of the Brexit agreement the UK signed in January 2020. As you've discussed before, because the Republic of Ireland is an EU member and there's a strong desire to not have any border controls between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, the UK and EU needed a way to enforce a customs border following Brexit. Their solution was a customs border between Northern Ireland and Great Britain, which meant that food and other products had to go through export controls to cross from the UK to Northern Ireland, and Northern Ireland would still follow EU rules on product standards. This is something the Conservatives and the Northern Irish DUP are very unhappy about. As we discussed before, the DUP are refusing to take up power sharing in the Northern Ireland Stormont until these issues are resolved. So what this bill is proposing is to allow ministers the power to remove these checks for goods only due to go to Northern Ireland. There would be a green lane for goods only going to Northern Ireland, with a red lane for those expected to go onto the EU, which would require checks. Additionally, there are provisions that would remove EU rules on tax and state aid for Northern Ireland, and it would also remove the European Court of Justice as arbitrators for the agreement and instead choose a separate unspecified dispute settling mechanism. The British government is trying to justify breaking this international agreement by claiming, quote, a doctrine of necessity. They're saying that the agreement they signed is now conflicting with the Good Friday Agreement and British territorial integrity, and, quote, the peril that has emerged was not inherent in the protocol's provisions.
And what is the reaction to this?
Yeah, Irish Taoiseach Michael Martin has called it reckless and economically incoherent, warning it could stabilise Northern Ireland politics. Brussels is expected to respond tomorrow, but a heavy legal fight will be on the cards. There's also risk of a trade war between the two, with the EU previously saying it will use all measures at its disposal. I mean, this isn't law yet, and Number 10 has a hard fight to push this through. The Conservatives are hoping to pass it in the House of Commons by summer recess on the 21st of July. It's unclear yet where the division lines are within Parliament, whether there'll be Conservative rebel MPs against the whole bill or certain provisions of it. Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer on Friday in an interview with The Telegraph said he would try to block the bill. And even if it does pass the lower house, the House of Lords will also scrutinise it and probably send the bill back for revision.
We spoke back in April, I think, about the UK looking to send asylum seekers to Rwanda, which sparked quite large protests in the UK. And I believe there's recently been a court ruling to give that a go-ahead. I think that might have even been what would be today for you guys over there at the moment. Can you tell me about that and the reaction that it's getting?
Yeah, this has been a developing story over the past couple of days. I think as we record this, the plane is on the tarmac, and I'm not sure if it will still go. So in April, Home Secretary Priti Patel announced plans for a five-year trial to send any migrant who arrives in the UK by boat to Rwanda. This would include those whose right to asylum are recognised and instead of being housed in the UK would live in Rwanda. This is after a large increase in refugees crossing the channel to reach the UK. More than 28,000 people entered the UK in boats last year, up from 8,500 in 2020. Dozens have died on this trip, including 27 people in November when a single boat capsized. So the first flight was due to depart today and amongst several last-minute legal challenges. Yesterday, the Court of Appeal upheld a High Court decision to deport migrants, and today there have also been several legal challenges for specific individuals on the flight, with most being denied. A full hearing on the legality of the plan is due to be held in July. If the plan is reversed, those who are sent to Rwanda would be sent back to the UK. Number 10 have been pretty hard-headed about this proposal. The first flight consists of less than 10 people and would cost around £500,000. Human rights and safety concerns have been raised about being settled in Rwanda, not only freedom of speech, but also being safe from persecution by the countries refugees are fleeing. Because you've got to remember, even if the refugee claims are recognised as legitimate, they still, you know, could receive consequences from the country they're fleeing from. The UNHCR have said that it goes against the fundamental rights of a refugee and that refugees shouldn't be treated like commodities. The Church of England have said it's immoral and is a national shame, and even Prince Charles is quoted to have said it's appalling. The BBC has quoted one of the men due to be on the flight today saying, "I would rather die than go to Rwanda."
So it'll take off the tarmac, or?
I'm not sure. Like, just before we went to air, the European Court of Justice, I think, grounded it, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't quote me on it.
Okay. Yeah. We'll keep an eye on that. Moving on, we are quickly becoming an election watch on this segment, but they do happen left, right and centre in the EU. So can you tell me about the first round of French parliamentary elections?
Yeah, far-left Frenchman Jean-Luc Mélenchon had an optimistic result in the first round of French legislative elections, with his alliance NUP coming within 0.1% of President Macron's coalition. So this is the second part of the election cycle in France, which happens every 5 years. In April, France had their presidential elections with centre-right Emmanuel Macron elected as president for a second term. In the second round of the election, he was pitted against far-right Marie Le Pen, in which he won 58% to Le Pen's 42%. This was seen as an existential vote to keep Le Pen out, with many on the French left begrudgingly voting for Macron. Now, with these parliamentary elections happening, those on the left are able to show their true colours. The French National Assembly consists of 577 seats, and like the presidential elections, there's two rounds of voting. The top two candidates as MP for a district from the first round then go to a second runoff vote, and this past Sunday was the first round. So Macron's Ensemble Alliance achieved 25.8%, and Jean-Luc Mélenchon's NUP coalition got 25.7%. Far-right Marie Le Pen's National Rally Coalition received just under 19% of the vote. It was a welcome surprise for Mélenchon. He actually did quite well in the presidential elections and came a close third, being beaten by Le Pen by only 1.2%. Following this, he then formed an alliance with various left-wing parties for these parliamentary elections. Le Pen, by contrast, has performed worse in these parliamentary elections. If Mélenchon gets in and becomes PM, Prime Minister, it could be a tough ride for Macron's agenda of increasing the retirement age and other education and welfare reforms. However, this is seen as unlikely. Polling by Ipsos puts NUP between getting 150 to 190 seats, so well short of the 289 needed to win a majority. However, Macron is also polling quite poorly, between 255 to 295. So it's also potentially he might not win a majority as well. With rising living costs, I mean, France hit 5.8% inflation in May, and other domestic concerns, Macron's support is dropping. This election will be hard to predict, but it will probably lean more to the centre in the second round. Turnout for the first round was only 48%, and it'll traditionally drop further for the second round. So yeah, we'll find out next week what happens.
And we'll catch up then about that. Finally, some moves in Europe to combat e-waste from USB charger ports and also limit the sale of petrol cars. Can you tell me about these moves? Maybe what's changing? What does it mean for Europeans and for the planet and perhaps us here in New Zealand too?
The EU have ruled that any new device must have a USB-C port for charging by late 2024. I mean, most devices already have this now, and people seem to be quite happy. Although Apple, as expected, aren't with it and said it would stifle innovation. The UK have also said they probably won't adopt this ruling. I'm not sure what will happen to New Zealand in terms of USB-C charging or what Apple do. I guess it kind of depends how Apple react and whether that's a kind of worldwide change. And in terms of cars, yeah, so for cars, no fossil fuel cars by 2035. The aim is to boost electrification of cars and kind of show a North Star for climate, for carbon zero. Although I think it seems quite late, to be honest. Some EU countries are already have declared sooner. So Norway have said by 2025, Sweden by 2030. Although it is 5 years ahead of the Glasgow Declaration, which New Zealand signed, and that's in 2040. So it's not final yet. It still requires countries to approve it. But yeah, some more changes on the way.
Thank you so much for chatting to me.
Macedonia with a reggae twist.
That was Eurovision on 95 BFM.
That was Eurovision with Francis and European correspondent Cameron Mulgan. And an update on one of their stories, the flight to Rwanda scheduled to take asylum seekers from the UK to Rwanda that Francis and Cameron were discussing has been cancelled following a last-minute legal battle.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.